Welcome back, and thanks again for joining us wherever you are and on whatever platform you are listening to us. It is so appreciated, your continued support, as well as spreading the word and just listening to the episodes. Just very, very appreciative as always. This episode is being recorded near the end of 2020, and by the time it's released, it will be the final episode of 2020 for this podcast. There is so much to reflect on and think about, because being a coach in 2020 is different than probably any other year that we have experienced. It is important that we as coaches take a step back to think about this year as it has affected us as coaches, and think about the lessons that we have learned from this year in 2020 and the things that we've learned from it that we can use from here on out to hopefully make us better coaches in the future. So to discuss this topic with me, I am so fortunate to be joined by a guest who, along with being a coach, has spent some time in 2020 talking to a lot of other coaches, just like I have, which makes her a perfect guest to have on to talk all about 2020 and the lessons that we've learned. So I am very happy to have with me Coach Sammy Doucette. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, all things considering. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that qualifier applies for a lot of people, all things considering, trying to do the best that we can. So let's go ahead, Coach, and before we dive into our topic, let's go ahead and start with an introduction to you, your basketball journey, your coaching journey. Where has the game taken you, and where are you currently at right now?
Sure. I think my journey is different than most, but I feel like that's the whole point of my podcast, right? Is that we all have these different journeys, and it's so interesting to hear everyone's journey. But so I played basketball pretty much from the time I was second grade to college, and basketball was the love of my life. Most passionate player you probably would have ever crossed paths with. I ended up going to Vanguard University. I was there for 5 years. I played for four. I redshirted my freshman year. I had an injury. And then immediately after graduating from Vanguard, I jumped into the coaching world. I became a graduate assistant at Concordia University in Irvine. I was there for 1 year, and then I went to Hope International University, which is an NAIA school. They compete against Vanguard in the GSAC conference. I was there for 1 year as the recruiting coordinator and assistant coach. I was a volunteer position, though. I was there while I was finishing my master's degree at Concordia. Both of those journeys were with new head coaches that were trying to rebuild a program from nothing. Pretty much as far as coming off of previous records of 2-22 or 5-20, inheriting that type of program, so to speak. So I was at both of those places for 1 year, and I realized fairly quickly that I just didn't want to be an assistant coach, and I wanted to be a head coach. My goal was to be a head coach 5 years after I graduated. I didn't really know where necessarily. Maybe that meant the high school level and me getting a teaching credential, or the college level. I just wanted to be in coaching. That's what I wanted to do. So I left Hope and I took the job at Costa Mesa High School, which is right across the street from Vanguard University, which is also right across the street in the other direction from Orange Coast College. I inherited a program of a total of six players, no JV, no frosh soft, and didn't really know what to expect, but ended up turning it around, really. I mean, I had a great staff and a great group of motivated girls that just wanted to work hard. We ended up building the program. We had 25 players. We won our league. Had a league MVP on our team. Six of our players made all league. Went to quarterfinal round of CIF. Still bitter about the loss. My best player, or one of my best players, I should say, she had the flu. She didn't play. We lost by 10. So that one still gets to me. Coach of the year, battle of the bell, stuff like that. So it was just an awesome year. And while I was doing this, I was also coaching club. And I was also coaching the boys middle school team at Costa Mesa and coaching the girls middle school team at Costa Mesa. And then, you know, the OCC job opened up. It opened up for the third time. So it opened up once when I was leaving Hope. I went after the OCC job, had a great relationship with Coach Thornton, ended up not getting it. I made it to the final round, didn't get it. So I took the Costa Mesa job. And, you know, my goal was really, I didn't know how long I was going to be at Costa Mesa, but turned out I really wanted to be a junior college coach. I wanted to be at that level. I wanted to sleep on my own pillow at night. I wanted to help players and not have the pressure of, if I don't win, we're going to have to pick up and move and, you know, find another job.
Right.
So I didn't know if it would take 1 year, 3 years, 5 years of being at Costa Mesa. I just knew that I was going to try to get that OCC job when it did open up full time. And when it did, I went after it and, you know, I ended up getting it. And that was a whole other journey that started, but an awesome journey at that one that I'm super grateful for. And now I'm starting year two at Orange Coast College.
And this year two, as I can imagine, is much different than year one was. I can imagine that there's quite a few things that are different between the two. And so it sounds like from your experience that, was it really important for you to kind of like stay local and stay in the area? I don't have a huge grasp of the geography of where you are, but I'm getting the sense that it is very local and it is very kind of like centralized to a certain area.
Yeah, you know, that's another reason why I wanted the Orange Coast College gig. I've grown up in Orange County my entire life, and I had opportunities to pursue coaching jobs in Montana or Northern California, and I really thought long and hard about it, pros and cons lists, had mentors tell me that I needed to move. If you want to get forward in this career, you need to move. And I just decided to not listen to them. And I was like, nope, I'm staying in California. I don't care if I need to be a volunteer and live at home with dad. I don't care if I have to be a walk-on high school coach. I'm not leaving. And thank the Lord, it paid off. And I'm very, very fortunate that I hopefully get to stay here for the rest of my career.
And I think that what you bring up kind of a good point in that, is that if you are home and if you like the area that you're in, that there may be opportunities for you to go elsewhere and maybe grow across the country. But ultimately, if you're not personally happy with being there, I think at a certain point it will affect you professionally if you're just not happy, you know, whether it's just not home or you're not around your family or other things, that you kind of have to weigh both. And it sounds like it worked out pretty well for you that professionally and personally, you're getting kind of both of the boxes checked off. So that sounds great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in your response earlier, you alluded to a podcast that you do, and I definitely want to talk about that, if only for the fact that I really like the name of your podcast as well, the Coaching Mud Podcast. I think that's great. So can you take a little time to talk about your own podcast? What's the purpose of it? What have you personally learned from your interactions with your guests as well?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting how it all came about, but we're in quarantine, you know, from March till really now. And so that's a long time. And I've been sitting on a lot of Zoom clinics, listening to coaches and hearing them explain these great drills, these defenses, offenses, all these things. And I just thought, like, wow, that's really great, you know, that you are just such a winning coach and you get to share your knowledge with everybody and help educate other coaches. But then I realized, you know, who were you before you were one of the all-time winningest coaches, or how did you get to where you are now? You know, how are you in your third year at such and such college? What did you do before there to get there? What's your journey like, and how is it different from everybody else's? I just wanted to know more about these coaches that I was listening to. And to be quite honest with you, I felt like maybe other people would also want to know, you know, because we're jumping on these Zooms. There's not really any networking for the most part. It's just listening. But I like to know who I'm listening to. You know, I really like to know their story and how they became who they are. And I don't think I'm alone in that. So I just thought it might be beneficial, especially for coaches out there that don't realize that, you know, a head coach at another school was literally in their shoes. And so when they're sitting there and they're thinking, man, I really don't want to work this job where I'm making nothing and I also have to be a server or I also have to work as a nanny or whatever else, they might listen to an episode and hear how the head coach of a Division I school or a junior college was in their position and just had grit and decided to just push through, and they share how they did it. They share any advice, and maybe it might help someone to also just, if they're, you know, really cut out for this profession, to just push through. So that's really where my thought process was. And, you know, we're in quarantine. I'm not really doing much. I teach online. I coach online at the time. So I was like, why not buy a $35 microphone and talk to coaches? So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's very similar, kind of in the same vein to what we do here. So for those listening, make sure you check in the description, because there will be links to the Coaching Mud podcast, which is great. And it kind of makes us realize that as coaches, we kind of have this network, hopefully, kind of coaches within our circle, within our region. But I know for me personally, it's just like so much I can learn from other people's journeys who I would never have the chance to talk to, such as yourself, in a normal situation and in a normal circumstance. And so getting to learn from one another, but also, like you said, just to learn about who they are as people, because as you mentioned, it's really easy to kind of see a coach who's really successful and almost think that they've always been successful and there wasn't really that struggle or that journey. But once you kind of realize what their journey was, you hopefully will be able to relate to them a little bit more, I think is what I've gotten out of it. And maybe what you have too, is that, you know, we all have a journey. We all kind of have a story to tell. And basketball is kind of one part of that journey, but there's so many other things that kind of go with it as well. So I think it's great. And I think it's always great to talk to one another and learn from one another. Speaking of learning, since this episode is focusing on lessons being learned from 2020, let's kind of dive into you personally about 2020. What is this year from COVID onwards kind of taught you in terms of coaching? How do you imagine pre-2020 you and post-COVID you, post-2020 you will be different?
Gosh, that's a tough one. You know, I remember in February just being stoked for how many players I had coming in and just being so motivated, so excited. I can remember, you know, my list of recruits, my top recruits, my number one recruit committing and saying, you know, I'm going to come play for you. And I just remember being just so pumped, already beginning the planning process. And then, of course, everything starts to shut down and it's 14-day quarantines. Okay, that's fine. 14 days, we can do that. Like, I'm still thinking ahead. This isn't a big deal. We're going to get it handled. And then it turns into, you know, what it's turned into. And this is really serious. And I'm being yanked around as a coach. My team is being yanked around, and not just us, but everybody. And so I wouldn't say it's definitely, I wouldn't say that it's taught me to adapt. It has reinforced the idea that, you know, what we think we have to adapt to as coaches is nothing compared to what we've had to adapt to this year. As far as you're going to be able to practice with your team with basketballs and equipment, and you guys are going to be able to high five. Never mind, you are not. There is a pandemic going around. No basketballs, 6 feet apart.
Don't
wear a mask. Don't touch each other. You know, it's just having to make a practice plan on a track like that. Is, to me, and every day, right? If you're a coach, by the way, I don't ever go to the track. I don't take my team to the track. I think I can accomplish any conditioning that I want to do in a basketball gym. And if you are a coach who takes your team to the track, I would imagine that it's maybe 2 to 3 times a week, but now for us, at least, it's every single day we're on a track and, you know, trying to get creative with workouts and stuff like that. It's just, it's wild. So this whole reinforcement of having to adapt to way more than you've ever had to adapt to and probably ever will. I know there's going to be lots of things that happen in my career, lots of things that happen in everyone's career, but this is something that across the board we've never dealt with. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something in particular. And then, you know, again, too, just this idea of you just have to be so appreciative of the time you do have. I mean, I remember finding out that, like, I from March until November 2nd, did not meet my team face to face. They did not meet each other. They didn't know who their teammates were other than the little box they see on Zoom. And so when we were told that we could meet face to face with all of these protocols and rules, it really was just awesome. And we're so appreciative of that. Obviously we want more, right? We want more, Sure. But to really not take this sport, to take this life for granted, I mean, it just is that, it's reinforced every single day, especially in the year of 2020, because you never know. You never know who's going to say, hey, coach, I'm feeling symptoms. And, you know, your whole world is rocked because you're worried about them. You're worried about everybody. And it's just insane.
Yeah. And the years go by quickly when you're coaching, regardless of any pandemic or anything that's going on. Freshmen become seniors, it seems like, overnight. And now with losing, you know, this bit of time, I remember for my players, we went from about February to mid-October without them seeing each other. And when they got to see each other, they were so excited. They were so excited to just see each other, maybe a little bit to see me, but mostly to see each other. And just how precious that time is. And like you said, to not take any of that for granted. And like you mentioned about, you know, if somebody is showing symptoms or, you know, things that happen, and then all of a sudden there's all these other things that you might have to adapt to and you might have to change on the spot. And so I'm curious for you and in your circumstance, since also because you coach collegiate players, did you have any, I don't want to say the word is difficulty, but you had to adapt, but at the same time as you were adapting, you had to potentially do that without like panicking or without like looking like flustered yourself. Is that something that you had to kind of manage with like the image that you were trying to project to your team to kind of keep everything together versus like also probably all the million things that were going on in your head? How did you kind of manage the idea of being adaptable while at the same time not looking like you were panicked and all over the place?
Oh, I try to manage that every single day. you know, I wouldn't say that I'm open with my team about like if I'm panicked. I'm transparent. You know, I will flat out say like, this is weird. I get it. You know, we are in weird times, but we're going to have to work with what we have. The key for me as a coach and for my staff is we might not have a season. I mean, right now we are told we're on track to have a season, you know, and that's something that can change. I'm aware of that. I think my players are aware of that, but I try to reinforce to my staff, to my team, we are being told we have a season. So I'm going to coach you like we have a season coming up. I'm not going to sit here and coach you like things might get shut down tomorrow. And that very well might happen because I don't know if there's going to be some wild outbreak or if it's going to get, you know, I don't know. None of us do. That's just what this whole year has taught us is we just don't know. But I have to coach them like we have a season. They need to stay motivated. We need to stay motivated. They need to stay optimistic. We need to stay optimistic. So I tried my very best to walk into, or I guess not into, but step onto the track and, you know, pump them up and get motivated to get after it, to train for a right now, what seems like a definite season because no one's telling us otherwise. But like I said, I am transparent. You know, if I put them through a drill where we're talking about imagining there's a basketball and whatnot, I'm like, I get it. It's weird, but we need to work with what we have so that we're ready to go. When we have a ball in our hands, this is just second nature.
And how has the response been so far from your players? Is it a situation where once they're on the track, like they're able to just kind of flip the switch and, you know, they're in basketball mode and everything is as normal, and I put that in quotes, as normal as it could be? Or have you found that you've had to sort of like stop and sort of like kind of go through with them and say like, hey, I know this is weird, like you mentioned, but like, we got to keep doing this. What is their kind of been their mental state so far for some of the workouts you've done?
I have no idea why, but I've been blessed with a group that is very motivated and is, you know, okay, coach, if you say there's a season, then we're going to work our tails off and prepare for one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't tell them, you know, I know this is weird, but we have to work with what we have, because if anything, I feel like what they're thinking, I'm just basically projecting my own thoughts.
Sure.
They've been just flat out amazing. I mean, I had these girls on Zoom 5 days a week, and I'm pretty confident just from what I've been hearing around that no one else is jumping on Zoom 5 days a week, making their players do 2-hour workouts on Zoom and mental trainings once a week. And all, like, I wanted us to just do the best we can with what we have, because I would have them in a gym for 2 hours a day. So why not have them on Zoom, especially a group that doesn't know one another. And again, hasn't even met. Like, they need to connect as best as they can. If we're going to have a season, I can't throw a group together a month before our season and be like, all right, I know we've never really done anything. We did Zoom twice a week, but let's try to, you know, play some games.
Sure.
But yeah, like I said, I don't know why, but I don't know what it stems from. I think it's just the group that we recruited. You know, they work so hard and they have good attitudes. And, you know, sometimes someone might say something or like laugh about something, but I mean, they're human beings. I totally get it. You know, look at the times we are in. So I mean, it is almost laughable when you're a basketball team on the track every single day, you know,
right?
not practicing basketball.
Well, I think that those unique situations are a very unique opportunity for bonding though, and as a way for your team to come together, because it's probably a situation that those players probably won't really ever be in again, and they probably won't forget about, you know, mm-hmm. when they were doing all this work in Zoom or all this work on the track. Like, that will be a special, you know, time for them to look back on, almost as maybe some sort of like a silver lining or happy memory in this difficult year. And so there is a lot of opportunities for bonding in kind of unique ways that maybe wouldn't have existed before.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to ask about your conversations and your kind of like your relationships in this 2020 period with your players that you had last year that are returning. So players that you already developed a relationship with before all of the COVID stuff happened. How were those conversations, or how were those relationships maintained or grown throughout this whole 2020 COVID period?
Sure. So did not have very many players on my team last year. I had, at best, we had 6 quote-unquote healthy players, and then I had one who was redshirting. So I had 7. And out of those 7, I have 3 that have returned. I had a couple transfer, and then I guess they all transferred. One's actually still there. She's done with her basketball. Basically, you know, they were like me in that they saw all these numbers that we had and they were really excited. And because last year was such a small team, I did try to do my very best to be super intentional with my girls and really, really get to know them, because last year wasn't about basketball. And, you know, every year isn't necessarily about basketball, but last year it really wasn't. You know, last year I knew that our goal was to be able to get on the court and just play as hard as we could and adapt, because we really had to adapt through a lot last year. And so I really wanted to know my girls, especially because they were giving me so much on the court when they had you know everything against them. When they stepped onto the court and there was only five of them, and the other team they're playing has, you know, 12 to 15, and they're playing five in, five out, and pressing them the entire time, but my girls kept fighting. So moving forward with the three that I have coming back, two of them are captains. One of them is actually a team manager this year. She's decided to focus more on school and still be a part of the team. I just flat out love those girls. You know, one of them went to Modern Day, played JV on Modern Day, stuck it out all 4 years. She ended up tearing her ACL. So she didn't play her last year. But just such a fighter, great kid, has completely turned around her academics. She's, you know, 3C2A All-State academic kid. Same with my other captain, Leah Dames, who that girl's going to play somewhere next year, you know, and this is a kid who did not love basketball for whatever reason in high school. She ended up quitting. I think there was, you know, something going on with just her relationship with the coach and playing time and whatnot. And I happened to reach out to her, just like I reached out to my other kid, Gracelyn, and through email, and because they filled out a student survey saying that they were interested in basketball. And, you know, she decided, hey, I haven't played in 3 years, but sure, I'll try it out. Why not? And now she loves the game, and now she's going on recruiting visits. And it's crazy how this all came about, you know, and I talk to my girls weekly on Zoom, still, like, we do academic meetings, we do individual meetings, and I just talk to them about life. So I think it's so crucial for me to have such good relationships with my returners because of everything that they went through last year. And now, like, they know me, they know what I expect. And, you know, I mean, even COVID considering, they're looking at their 17 incoming freshmen and they're like, you better not complain about anything. You have no idea what we went through last year. But yeah.
Yeah, they can sort of kind of get everybody sort of in line. They kind of know what the journey's been like, so to speak, and they kind of know you know where things have been and where it is that you want to go. And I think that's just, like, so helpful. And it sounds like those relationships are really strong, and I'm sure that they've benefited you a lot in that, you know, like we just mentioned, they can kind of talk to those incoming players or kind of, like, set the tone. And I think that I'm assuming for a lot of your incoming freshmen, it's probably really important for them to have a peer like that, somebody close to their age group who can hopefully they can sort of confide in and be able to talk to and kind of look up to a little bit in kind of like this almost mentorship type role.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crucial for them to have that. So I'm so glad that they, because the team last year, you know, they didn't have that because we were all just new. Every single player was new except for two returners.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, I mean, that this is kind of provided a unique opportunity for that mentorship in a lot of different ways in basketball and non-basketball, especially with everything going on here in 2020. So you mentioned how you had the idea of adaptability kind of reinforced, and this whole COVID shutdown is kind of reinforced this idea of you needing to be adaptable. Are there any other things that you think you did prior to 2020 that you're like, I'm definitely going to make sure that I keep doing this after 2020, or maybe that the importance of those things has been renewed in your mind? Are there any other things besides adaptability that kind of stick out?
Yeah, I mean, in addition to being able to adapt to damn near anything that is thrown at you, I think that I'm also going to just try my best to be, you know, in my eyes, an excellent planner, to try my best to plan for a COVID-19 protocol practice, to try my best to plan anything, and plan ahead, even if, you know, I'm going to end up, I say this a lot, having to crumple up my plan and throw it in the trash, then, you know, that's when adapting comes into play. But I think planning, organization, adaptability, those are all things pre-2020, post-2020, I definitely have to continue on with.
So in, when you say about organization, what did organization kind of look like for you prior to 2020? In what ways were you organized, or what did organization look like for you in that sense?
Yeah, so organization for me looks like I have everything for myself on Google Drive, as far as like my OCC women's basketball blueprint. So organization for me looks like planning out exactly down to the week, down to the day, what I wanted accomplished in the first, 10 weeks of preseason. Then organization looks like, okay, what do I want accomplished over Zoom in the first, month or 2 months or 3 months, whatever it ends up being. I have everything on Drive. I try to keep everything organized, budgeting, contact information. My recruiting database is, in my eyes, it's super organized, just everything. And that really hasn't necessarily changed, but what's had to change is just adding on to what needs to be organized and planned. And, now I have a separate practice plan for COVID-19 conditioning drills, basketball list drills, and just trying to do my absolute best job to have a plan for anything that may come up, even though I know that's hard to do because you don't know what's going to come up.
Sure.
I try my best to plan for stuff that might not even happen.
And with that idea of having a plan for everything and staying organized and staying on top of things, I know one of the challenges for 2020 for a lot of coaches has been having to adapt, having to make those accommodations, having to perhaps take on different levels of responsibility or do different tasks than they normally would, while at the same time understanding that you personally are also going through COVID, this pandemic and this situation, and you personally have things that you need to be aware of and take care of in other aspects of your life. So how has that balancing act been versus with you having to take on new responsibilities and task coaching versus also the fact that you as a human being are also going through this COVID situation yourself? How's that balancing act been for you this year?
I would say that early on it was difficult. Like I said, I was really probably like many people across the nation who were finishing up seasons, who maybe didn't have the best record or the best, year or numbers or whatever. I know I wasn't alone in that. I was feeling really motivated, motivated to get a team together in the summer. And really all I was thinking about going into 2020 was, I put my all into my job and my team, and I was excited to do that. And, I know everyone has lots of things that they were looking forward to that they couldn't because of COVID. So I'm not going to sit here and negate that. But for me personally, that was what was on my mind. And it was really hard some days. I've been in my apartment for, every day. I, like I said, I teach online. For the longest time was coaching online. Like my computer and I have a really great relationship now. We've really bonded. And I think it's been difficult at times. It's getting easier now that I am able to go see my team face to face. But sometimes to, convince myself like, okay, we got a practice to run, and not knowing, there wasn't ever a clear cut, you're gonna return to campus this day. So just again, having to try to motivate myself to even sometimes like get out of sweatpants or to, just like get on with my day. I didn't have to do that because I was in my apartment all day, and that can be very draining. And I know that if I'm going through this, my players are going through this, other people are going through this. So I have to find a way to set the example and also, again, be very transparent with my team. Like, hey, sometimes you might say that you're going to get this, this, and that accomplished in the day. And if you don't, that's okay. Don't beat yourself up. If you set aside a day to work out, I'm going to work out for 30 minutes today, or I'm going to get this assignment done that's not due till next week. I'm going to get it done today. If you can't because of your mental health or because of whatever else is going on, don't beat yourself up about it and just try again the next day kind of thing. And that's kind of how my mentality has been, trying to not be so hard on myself if, you know, I can't do the things that I say that I'm going to do. And it's been hard because of quarantine and, you know, just being trapped inside. But like I said, it's like night and day now that we're able to be outside. Sure. And I know my athletes feel the same way. They've got to feel, I would imagine, just so much better now that they can actually see their team and be around their team and whatnot.
And I think that there's just so much to be said for just being able to go to a different location, just like go somewhere else, right? And just get a bit of a change of scenery. I think there's so much to be said for that. And one of the things you brought up was, it's kind of like two extremes, I think, that coaches could have potentially gone on, and maybe day to day they kind of went through both extremes, where you kind of have those days, like you mentioned, like you just like don't get out of your sweatpants and you don't really get the things that you want accomplished, and you just sort of, you know, it's just a tough day. But then I think there's also these other days possibly that exist where you have all this time, and before you know it, you're spending like 20 hours like on Zoom calls and looking at basketball related things and absorbing all of this basketball related information that you could end up just sort of consuming you. And so I'm curious for you personally, as somebody who was on a lot of Zoom calls, how you sort of balanced this, all this information that you were able to kind of take in with COVID and kind of all of this, you know, basketball related stuff that you've taken in, versus like staying true to the things that like you believed in as a coach. How did you kind of sift through all of the like new information and like new stuff that you were learning through all of these Zoom calls?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I don't know how my answer is going to come across here, but I'm not someone who sits on a Zoom and listens to 20 coaches and has 50 pages of notes. I am not trying to be Gino Auriemma. I'm not trying to be Kelly Graves or anyone else other than myself. I'm trying to stay true to who I am as a coach. You know, I definitely will take away a really cool drill or a really cool set or an idea, a culture thing, a non-negotiable. I take stuff like that away for sure. So I would say it hasn't been tough to balance. It's been really nice because I've added definitely things to my arsenal across the board with defense or, you know, anything, like I said, culture, philosophy, all that stuff. And if I think it works for me, then I'm going to do it. And if I think it doesn't, it's not going to work with my team. It's not going to work with my school, my players, and I'm not going to do it. So there have been a couple coaches that I've listened to where I'm very impressed that I have, impressed with myself, the fact that I've managed to take 3 pages, 4 pages of notes after hearing one person speak, because that's just not typical of me. I'm not much of a note taker in that regard. So yeah, I mean, I try my best to stay true to myself, but if I see something and I like something, I definitely take note of it. And sometimes I take note of it. Like I watched a 1-3-1 matchup zone, and you know, a clinic on a 1-3-1 matchup zone. And to be honest with you, I don't think that I'm the type of coach who wants to teach a 1-3-1 matchup zone, but if someone runs it against me now, I might have a pretty good idea how to beat it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I try to take in when I watch these clinics. And it's been awesome. You know, I hope it's something that we continue to do even post COVID, mm-hmm. post 2020, there's still coaches that are willing to just sit down and share the game with everyone for free.
Well, I think that's an interesting point that you brought up about, you know, all of this information that's available and was definitely available this year and all the clinics and everything like that. And I think that as a coach, you kind of have to be almost mindful of your own philosophy and mindful of your time and go to the things that you think are going to benefit you or are things that at least interest you. And so I'm wondering now, even for you, personally going forward, if you feel that you have a sense of okay, these are the types of coaches who I know I want to hear from, or these are the types of Zoom clinics or things that I have an interest in. Has this year kind of shaped that in a way, or are you still relatively open to, checking out and seeing what else is out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I want to hear from everybody. I think I am way too early in my career to only, to put myself in a box and to say I only want to hear from this type of coach. I'll even listen to coaches who talk about the system, and I think the system is just flat out silly. I'll never run it. I'll never do it, but I still want to hear about it because you never know. I guess I shouldn't say never, but so yeah, I will listen to anybody, and I want to hear any idea. Of course, if it's something that just I'm like, what are you talking about? Then I might, try to slide out of that Zoom, but I haven't had that happen really. I mean, I've left early for sure, but nothing because I've seen something crazy. But yeah, no, in short, I want to hear from everybody.
So in 2020, of all of this information that you've taken in, how much have you, I don't want to say changed your coaching philosophy, but how much, I guess, have you taken in that you are either implementing or you think that you are going to use? Because I imagine that you've gotten a lot of information that you've taken in, and you're kind of balancing it versus with your own coaching philosophy and what you personally believe in as a coach. So in terms of just coaching in general, how much do you see changing, whether it's schematically or just with your thought process?
Yeah. I would say as far as philosophy goes, I haven't really thought about making too many changes there. And I don't know, that may change. I'm only in year two as a collegiate head mm-hmm. coach. I kind of liked the philosophy we had last year, and I'm moving forward with that. It works pretty well with this group as well. As far as systematically, things that will run, there's definitely been a few quick hitters that I've added. I've definitely taken away some terminology that I really like. Those are some big things. Some ideas to do within a team as far as what apps to use with a team bonding. That's the kind of stuff that I love to hear about, because I think as far as basketball goes, again, I like getting new drills and new defenses and offenses, but I've said this before, no one's reinventing the wheel here. It's really mm-hmm. about these personalities that we have and what works with them and how to coach each and every single one of them, fairly, but not necessarily equally, because everybody's different. And I think that if you can do that and you can keep everybody bought in and they trust you and you're transparent, then the scoreboard is going to take care of itself. And that's something that I will say confidently, that, it doesn't really, I don't think it comes down to what drills you're doing and what offense or defense you're running. I think it really just comes down to, does your team trust you, believe you, want to follow you, see that you have credibility and, buy in.
Well, I think that's a great point that you mentioned, and that I think that there's definitely a trap that coaches can fall in where they almost feel overwhelmed by all the information that's out there, and they feel like there's all this information out there and I got to change all of this, or I should implement all these different things, or they might feel insecure about their own knowledge of all of the things that they're learning. But it sounds like for you, and I agree with this, that you kind of have to have some sort of core philosophy or sort of core belief that almost goes away from basketball to stick to, and that if you can stick to that, and it sounds like for you it's having that trust, and that having that trust and starting with that foundation and then kind of working your way up. Am I kind of right in thinking that?
Oh yeah, definitely. And don't get me wrong. I definitely find myself thinking, okay, yeah, I want to use that. Oh, I want to try that with my team. And then being like, okay, wait a second. I need to slow down here. let's not try to throw all these different crazy things at your team. Although I've done that, I'm guilty of that for sure. But yeah, no, you're not wrong in that thinking at all.
And so would you, I guess, for advice for newer coaches or younger coaches who maybe have been learning, you know, all of this information, maybe they're a first year coach who's taking over a program this year, and they've had, you know, the last 7 or 8 months just to have all this information dumped into them. What advice would you give to a new coach or a younger coach who maybe has just had, you know, 8 months worth of Zoom meetings of information thrown at them, and now they're going to hit the ground running and start building their own program?
Well, definitely right there. That's the first one for sure. Hit the ground running. You know, whatever you have your first day on the job as a new coach of a program, you know, instill what you want to instill or say what you want to instill right away. Let your players know who you are, what you stand for, what you're going to accept and what you're not going to accept. And then stay true to that. Whatever you tell your team that you value, or whatever you give off that you value, because your culture essentially is going to be your behavior plus your values. And actions speak a lot louder than words. Mm. So just be the type of coach who is going to do what they say they're going to do, or they're going to do what they say that you want your players to do. And stay true to that. You know, lose a game because your best player didn't follow the rules or whatever expectations, if you have a problem with the word rules. If you set expectations and your best player who you need to win a game doesn't fit those expectations, then sit them. Stay true to your values, because the second that you don't, you start to let your best player, you know, slide because they're your best player, and you make an example of the eighth string or eighth person, sure, off the bench, whatever, then your team's going to start to see that you have no credibility and you really don't care about the culture you preach. You just care about winning. I think that's the biggest thing that I would say.
Yeah. And that's a very dangerous mindset to get into. And your players will pick up on, I've said it a few times and other guests have said it here, like, players see everything. They notice everything. Mm-hmm. And so there's really nothing that you can kind of get away with, because they'll notice that unfairness or that, like, partial treatment to one player over the other. And so, mm-hmm, absolutely. Now, one of the things that kind of touched on throughout this conversation, I know I've talked to other coaches about it, and so I wanted to get your perspective on it as well. I've talked to a couple of coaches, and they said, you know, one of the things that this year has kind of taught me or forced me to do is to almost stop being a basketball coach and have to turn that switch off in my mind, because I just couldn't be that coach, and I had to let go for a little bit here in 2020. And I know that work-life balance is always kind of that key term, and that we're always probably striving for. So I'm just curious, for you personally, did you find here in 2020 that you had to almost turn off the switch for a bit and just not be a basketball coach for like a day or so, or however long of a time period? Or were you kind of just like always on? What was that experience like for you?
I think that I am too young and too new in my career to have those days. I'm just going to flat out say it. I have not turned it off. Every day I'm a basketball coach. I'm other things as well, but I have not shut it off. I don't think that I have earned any day to be like, you know what, I'm going to maybe not text my kids back these today, or I don't know. No, the answer is no. I haven't done that yet. I might do it, you know, soon, eventually, but I think I'm too young. I need to stay motivated, energetic. And don't get me wrong, I have fun. I do other things, but I am, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, I'm a basketball coach. And my fiance probably hates me for that sometimes, but I am. If I get a text from a kid and I'm doing something that has nothing to do with basketball, I'm, hold on 1 second, let me reply to this person. I got to respond right away. You can wait. No, I can't. That's how I am. So no, I haven't.
So I guess my follow-up question to that is, in especially with this year in 2020, how has that not, like, I guess, consumed you, or like gotten to the point where like it just completely overwhelms you? Is it just a thing where like basketball is just something you're so used to and it's so ingrained in your life that it's already dedicated this much energy or time out of you? Or I'm just curious, with all the things going on in 2020, like you haven't turned that switch off at all. So how has that worked to the point where it hasn't just like overwhelmed you or even made you want to like shut down for a day?
Yeah. It's overwhelming when it's overwhelming, and when it's not, it's not. So it's not like I have kids, my student athletes texting me all day, every day. Like I haven't, it's Saturday, I haven't heard from an athlete today. It doesn't necessarily mean I'm taking off my basketball coach hat. If I do get a text or something, I'll respond, or if there's something that I think I need to announce to my team, I'll let them know. But even today, I've already opened up my computer and started planning Monday. But that to me isn't overwhelming. That's just me being in quarantine, having some mere boredom and thinking, well, I could really use this time to be productive and plan what I want to do with my team. So yeah, no, I there have been times when it's been overwhelming, of course, but that's not because of 2020. Overwhelming for different reasons for sure, but I was overwhelmed last year. I was overwhelmed the year before as a coach, and I'm pretty sure I'll be overwhelmed until the day I retire.
So for you, like you're always like on, like your coaching hat is always on, but it's more of like your like kind of like your availability, and like you are available if somebody needs you, you'll reach back out to them, or if you have time to, like you said, get some work done, you'll do it. But I just think that you have kind of navigated that pretty well, and that you kind of have that balance, but it's definitely something to be mindful of for other coaches as well, just to be thinking about that you don't want this to completely like overwhelm you or stress you out to the point where like you don't have any other like things that bring you happiness or joy or other outlets to relax with. And it sounds like you've kind of balanced those waters, or there's other things that you have that you're still doing as well.
Yeah, sorry if you heard that. That was my dog
That's
hacking up
all
the
good.
lung. Yeah, no, I mean, and I don't want it to sound like I always have my coach's hat on, but I guess I should say that I'm always prepared to put it on, like you said,
Sure.
available. But I mean, even throughout my day when I'm doing something, sometimes I find myself, and I know a lot of coaches more experienced will say that this is something you should try not to do, but I sometimes struggle with being in the present, and I will essentially put my coaching hat on and I'll start thinking about a practice plan I want to do, or something I want to tell my players. Sorry.
No, you're all good.
You know what I mean? Something like that. But yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's just kind of the balance that you strike, and I think over the years you figure out whatever that perfect balance is for you. And if you're in the situation where you have a lot of time to give and a lot of time to dedicate, and you can just do it and it's not a problem at all, then go ahead and do it. It kind of sounds like the right approach to have. And I know that, kind of pivoting back to something we just talked about a little bit earlier, about you as a coach and the way you have to conduct yourself and the way you have to kind of be around your players. What do you think coaches in general can learn through this difficult year, in terms of kind of being a rock for their players during uncertain times? Is it being available? Is it being transparent? What sort of things do you think coaches would be able to learn so that they're that rock and that steady presence in their players' life during these uncertain times?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I it's funny because I'm actually going to be doing a clinic coming up soon where I'm gonna kind of talk about this. So this is gonna sound well, it sounds redundant to me because I'm the one who put it together, right? But nonetheless, I'm gonna go with absolutely transparency is huge. I know there's a lot of coaches, a lot of leaders that struggle to to be transparent as far as, you know, it's okay with being vulnerable with your kids. I'm not saying you need to sit down and cry it out with them. Maybe do that once, I don't know, but be vulnerable with them. You know, it's okay to say I was wrong or whatever else that may come in line with being transparent, but also being empathetic, you know, and that's pre-2020, post-2020, during 2020. I think we're going to see it or learn from it a lot more now, but, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in these kids' lives, and me, I don't have kids. I don't have siblings that I live with. So when you have players on Zoom that need to babysit or they have to go to work because such and such at work got COVID and can't come in and they need you, like, be empathetic. You know, basketball is not their life. Just because basketball is my life doesn't mean I expect it to be my player's life. Just because, you know, so-and-so puts in extra work to be the best, but your best, most gifted player on the team doesn't mean she should be faulted for it, you know? So I think empathy, transparency, compassion comes with that as well. Be more compassionate and understanding that things are going to come up and that, you know, your team is going to be totally fine. If so-and-so misses one day, they're not going to forget how to play basketball or how to run on the track if they miss one practice. So get over it, get over yourself. And we say that, you know, in the real world, that would never happen. You'd get fired. That's not true. In the real world, sometimes you have a situation where you need to get something done and your boss is understanding. And, you know, if you work for a compassionate, good leader, then they'll be understanding. And if you don't, then maybe that's someone you don't want to work for to begin with. Now, granted, if you have something coming up every other day or once a week, that's a different story. But if it's once in a blue moon, so-and-so has something where they need you to be a little bit more understanding, then, you know, let it slide.
I just have to add to a part that you mentioned about that phrase about things about in the real world. I mean, I tell my players, this is the real world. I'm not going to give you any in the real world speech because we are in the real world right now when you're talking to me. And so if things come up, there is a level of understanding. I always found that phrase really odd that, you know, people would say like in the real world as if what they're doing isn't in the real world or isn't, you know, reflective of what actually goes on in the real world. I think that's really interesting. But and you bring up a good point and something that I think that is really important for coaches to consider is that you as a coach are going to be spending a significant amount of time because it's your job on anything basketball related, and something that you have to consider is that for these players, they don't have that same buy-in as you do. It doesn't necessarily mean the same thing to them as it does to you. And it's very important to not get resentful or bitter about that. And it sounds like that's something that you are very well aware of, and you have to understand that as a coach, that it's not going to mean the same to them as it does to you.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, I personally just don't think it's really possible. Like I said, I'm super passionate, and I don't know if that's because I'm a younger, newer head coach. I've always been passionate about basketball, and I've always tried to be, you know, the first one in the gym, last one out, and no one should be faulted if they aren't that person. It just means it's not their passion, you know, or it's not
only one person could be the first one in.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's okay to be the second one or the second to last to leave. Like, it's okay to have these different levels of passion. It's just really, it's all about, you know, the effort and working hard and whatnot.
Yeah, you don't want to create that culture where you don't want to be the first one to leave, then nobody will leave. And then it's
exactly.
Like, please, somebody leave. It's okay if he's getting to that chess match. That's funny. I want to ask you this question before we hit our concluding segment here, because you do have your own podcast. So I'm just curious about what is something that you have learned or really taken away from one of the guests that you've had on?
Well, I've taken away from everybody that I've had on.
Good answer.
yeah, I mean, I really have. It's like the Zoom clinics. I've taken away at least one nugget from everybody. Some people have taken away more. You know, and the one of the things that sticks out to me right away is I was actually just talking to Coach Christine Collins Kiernan, and she said, you know, it's not about who you know, it's about who knows you. And I thought that was so true. And so, like, we have it so backwards, you know, it really is about who knows you if you're trying to move on in this career and things like that. And that's not something necessarily that I, like, advice I need, because I am at a point where I want to stay where I am. I'm not trying to move on. But I think it's so crucial for anyone who's trying to move on to just know that. And if you're trying to get a job anywhere, to just know that. And I think it's just, it's huge. And then I've just learned too from other coaches, as far as, you know, being able to adapt based on the players that you have each year. Don't try to instill things into players that just, it's not them. As much as you need to be your true authentic self, you have to have a team that you're okay with them being their true authentic selves. And I think that's something that was really eye-opening and very true, and something to take note of as I move forward in this profession. And then, you know, just a couple other things from coaches that have explained how their journey started as being a win at all costs type of coach, a transactional leader, if you will, to inform in turn transitioning into a transformational leader who's going to be the type of coach who gets to know their players and who wants to know their lives and is who, what we were talking about before, being transparent and being vulnerable and being able to say, I was wrong, or yes, this drill is really silly, but we're going to do it anyways. And we're going to do it very hard. You know, we're going to work hard at it and just things like that. Caring more. We say we're doing this because we care about kids. Then don't just check their grades, you know, once a semester and feel good about yourself because you, yeah, I check my student athletes' grades, their students first. Like, no, you don't care. If you're just checking their grades one time, you don't care. So that's definitely something that I've taken away, is to truly dive into their lives. You don't need to know who they're dating and what kind of relationship problems they're having, but just be you. And that right there is going to open the door to them wanting to come to you and share things. You don't need to poke and pry. You can let those relationships form naturally. And I think that just hearing things like that, and it's not necessarily because of advice that these coaches I have on are saying this verbatim. It's lessons learned within the stories that they share, you know, the stories that they share about the mistakes that they've made. Like, okay, maybe I need to not do that, you know, or lessons that they've learned with just how their careers or how they've evolved as a coach. It's all worthwhile, and it's all worth me taking note of and either trying to, you know, embody that, so to speak, or not make that mistake, or take it or leave it, essentially.
And it's perfect, because all of those lessons that you kind of talked about and things that you learned, they kind of have to do with basketball, but a lot of them really don't. A lot of them are just great skills in general, just as a person and as a leader, and things that can be adapted in any form or in any profession. And those things that you spoke about, I think, are going to form just a lot better, just memories and a lot stronger relationships that are going to carry on a lot further past basketball. And I know from the coaches that I speak with, and me personally, I mean, that how much that means to coaches in general, to have those, you know, those connections and those relationships, and to have those players who will still text you, you know, 20 years later, or still come by and see you because you cared, and you cared about them as people and not just players. And so it's really great to hear you reaffirm that, because I don't think that lesson or that message can be said too many times.
Yeah, definitely.
So to wrap up, Coach, what I asked two questions to every guest. So the first one is, what is a coaching moment from your coaching career that you think others listening would be able to learn from?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know if this is the the best one to share, so to speak. Maybe there's one
Let's do
better
it.
because there's been so many things in my short time. But one thing that I will say, that the first thing that came to mind is, when I was going after this Orange Coast College job, I was waiting around to see if I was going to get a final interview. And while I was waiting around to see if I was going to get a final interview, I was offered a head coaching job at another school, a private school in a very competitive league, one of the most competitive leagues in the country. And it was a situation where I didn't necessarily know if I wanted to be there forever. I didn't know if, it was a job where I would be getting paid a lot more than a public school walk-on coach, but I still would need to do something else for some income. But it was a great job to have if I wanted to move on to maybe a school like OCC or another school. And there came a point where it was like they were not going to wait around. I said, "Look, I'm in the running for the Orange Coast College job, and I really want this. I want this too, but I might get this job." And they would wait for me, but they, of course, they played the game of, "We don't want to rush you, but you have 2 days."
Sure.
So, and I get it, I totally get it. I kind of went out on a limb there, even telling them that I was waiting for another job. But I really struggled with what to do because OCC wasn't a sure thing. I could have bombed my final interview, or there could have been someone better than me. There probably was. But I, and everyone too around me told me, go for the high school job. Don't, you're not going to get the Orange Coast College job. I mean, I kid you not, everybody. Family, parents. I had two people in my life. One of them was Coach Christine Collins, who basically said, I would go in there and I would be confident, just bet on yourself. And I had my fiance who also said, I support whatever you do, but I believe in you. And so I had a moment where I had to really decide what I wanted to do. And I decided to listen to those two people out of everybody else in my life. And I said, you know what, I'm going to bet on myself. And that's exactly the verbiage essentially that I used, with the athletic director of the high school. It was really, really, reassuring or reaffirming and nice and so appreciative. And I said, but I really think that I have to bet on myself here. And
Sure.
thank God I did. So what I would say, if you can learn anything from that, is to just believe in yourself. If you think that you're not qualified, or you think that there's someone who's older and wiser, or you're too young or whatever, if you believe in yourself and you can try to have some believability and credibility and show how you're going to do things and how you've done them before and whatever else, if you know or believe that you can do that, then bet on yourself. Who cares? Who's telling you that you can't do it or you're not good enough? Just freaking do it.
Perfect. Nothing to even add to that. Go for it, go for it. And if that's what you're passionate about, because regret is not anything that is fun to live with or think back on. So what's the point of having that regret when you can just kind of go for it and bet on yourself, and you never know what doors will open for you or what will end up happening. And I think a lot of opportunities for a lot of not just coaches, but people in general have opened up because they believed in themselves. And that belief in yourself, I think, kind of shows through in those interviews and in those conversations. They kind of can see that you have that confidence in yourself. And so that's great. And hopefully those listening will, if they're in that position, they'll take that advice. And like you said, just sort of go for it. I like that a lot. So, Coach, to wrap up, I give every guest what I call a 60-second soapbox. Feel free to go longer if you'd want. It is your platform to get out your final message, closing thought, final idea, just whatever that thought is that you want to leave our listeners with. So, Coach, I'm going to go ahead and give you the floor.
Wow, that's tough. I've rambled a lot. I've talked a lot about my experiences or advice or anything like that. So I'll just leave it with this. If you want to coach, just make sure it's something that you absolutely love. And if if it's something that you want to do, just be passionate, be about it for the right reasons. And remember that you are an extension of your student athletes, parents, or guardians. You are someone that they are going to look to, that they're going to remember for the rest of their lives. And this is a very, very, whether it's high school, junior college, college, this is a time, a very important time in their lives where they are maturing, where they're becoming who they are. So just don't take that for granted and understand that you have a huge responsibility. And I say this to myself as well, like this is something I need to continue to acknowledge. Like just remember that your role is so crucial to your student athletes. And if you are in this, just remember that you are in this for a reason. You are right where you need to be right now in this moment for a reason. And that's it.
Great. I think that's a great way to end that. Coach Doucette, I want to thank you for spending some time kind of talking about this crazy year of 2020 and everything that we've kind of learned from it and we'll use going forward. I hope that you have some games to play and that you can keep on coaching and being with your girls and you can keep on doing what you're doing and have a successful season and keep up the great work you're doing with your podcast as well. So thank you so much. Good luck going forward, Coach.
Thank you so much. I wish you all the best as well. And you know, I'm so appreciative that you asked me to be on this because, you know, I'm nobody. I really am. And I love talking hoops. I love talking coaching. It's, like I said, it's my passion. So I really appreciate the platform and the conversation.
It was a pleasure. And thank you, all of you, for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast, the last edition of 2020. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time, as well as next year.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com.